What's going on, guys? You're listening to Geek Talk. Coming up, we're going to hear from John Jensen and Mike Sherman. They're going to talk to us about the recommendation system they're using over at Rich Relevance. This talk was recorded at the Pandora meetup on recommendation engines from last week. And if you want to check out more stuff like this, you can find us at g33ktalk.com.
Hi. So I'm going to talk about the Rich Relevance recommendation system. I think actually this is a very interesting format because what we do is a little bit different than what our friends at Julia do, and a little bit different than what, actually a lot different than what our other friends at Pandora do. So I'm going to talk about our problem domain, the problems that we solve, and what's special about it. A little bit about Rich Relevance. We provide content personalization as a service. And in most cases, the content we're interested in are retailers' descriptions of their products. So for example, if you go to Walmart.com or Target.com, JCPenney.com, or one of our other large retailers, you will see that parts of the experience, parts of the website is provided by us. Usually you can't really tell unless you know what to look for, because it gets blended into the rest of the layout of the page. But there might be, you know, classical product recommendations of the form, you know, people with similar history to you prefer these products. They could be promotions, ads, anything really. And as I mentioned, we do that as a service for retailers. We don't really have our own website, so we recommend all kinds of things. We recommend women's shoes and lawnmowers and cooktops and everything, except houses, actually, and music. So what are some of the things that are special and different and specific about the Rich Relevance system? It's behavioral. We don't know very much in most cases about the domain of what we're recommending. So it's not like Pandora, which has intrinsic knowledge about music, and they can have intrinsic similarity metrics between the things they're recommending. We, in most cases, just know that it is product A or product B. We might know that it's product A of brand Gucci or brand Sony, or, you know, that it's a lawnmower, but we don't know a whole lot about lawnmowers. Another thing that is different than say, Julia, is that we're very focused on what you're doing right now. As the previous speaker mentioned, if you're shopping for something, what you're doing is something that's very much in the moment. It doesn't really matter what you've been doing for the past 30 days. You know, you might have been shopping for stuff for your kids for Christmas, but now you really need a pair of shoes, and you don't really want to see recommendations for any more Legos. You just want to see shoes. So it's very much what you're doing right now, and very different than music recommendations, which has a long history, or real estate recommendations, which are, you know, obviously you might jump around, but basically, you know, you might be interested in, you know, in San Francisco, that's a small one bedroom house for $1.7 million, right? And and another thing that's interesting about our recommendations is that we always try to explain why we're making recommendations. You will very rarely see a Rich Relevance recommendation saying things like, "We think you would like," or "Based on what we know about you, you think you would like." We try to make the recommendations and the labeling of the recommendations so that you know why things are being recommended to you. Specifically, you know, the classical people who bought and looked at this product tend to like this product, or people who have an affinity for brands Nike like these shoes. So, and it's a matter of building trust. It's a matter of making the shopper feeling that they understand why they're being recommended something. It's not just something that we're trying to get rid of, although in some cases it is. So I'll get back to that a little bit later, but trust is very important to us. It's very important that the user trusts the recommendations that we make. And as I mentioned, it's retail focused. And that matters greatly because retailers have specific business requirements that we have to meet. I'll get into that a little bit later. And it's fast. We have very stringent SLAs for most of the recommendations that we make. And, you know, I'll talk about that a little bit as well. I already talked about behavioral recommendations, that we have no intrinsic knowledge about the things that we're recommending. We strictly have to go from browse history, and you know, we don't really generally have a way for people to express their preferences in the same manner that that Trulia has, except by things that they do. You know, if people buy a product, we can infer that they most likely like that product. Either that or it's a really good deal. But we don't really have, you know, really have like buttons or things like that, although, you know, we could. And as I mentioned, recommendations are made in a context. And they're very, very targeted to the user's current context. As an example here, the user A is on an item page for a Sony XYZ32 TDV. And a context has many different aspects, though in this case, the product is the specific product that it is. The brand is Sony in this case. And the category have, you know, in this case, it's very nice. TV, flat screen, LCD, less than 40 inch. In reality, retailers' category hierarchies are less nice, and often downright messy. And retailers will use categorizations for just as a way of structuring their site navigation. So we use categories, but it's not always the cleanest data. So that's the retailer provided aspects of the context, so to speak. Then another aspect is the various affinities we can derive from a user's browse history. In this case, the user has been browsing the DVD player section and recently. So that means, well, you know, they were interested in DVD players 20 minutes ago. Most likely they're still interested in DVD players, and now they're looking at Sony products. Maybe we should recommend them Sony DVD players. But we generally do not care about what they did 3 days ago. Other aspects could be demographic information that we generally don't have personally identifiable information. We, in most cases, do not want it, because then we have to worry about making it very secure, and we'd rather not have to worry about that. So, but we might be able to figure out what their, you know, what their DMA region is, or what their, you know, what country they're in at least, and use that for making recommendations. So, and as I mentioned, in depending on where they are on the retailer's website, we have some or all of that context. There are many aspects to our context. And depending on what kind of context we have, we can make different recommendations. If they're on a search page, we know what they searched for, or we might have their search history. If they're on a brand focus page, we might know what the brand is, but we may not have a search. So depending on where they are and what their history is, we will use different algorithms for making recommendations, and different algorithms require different contexts, obviously. Things like people who made similar searches eventually bought, clearly works well on search pages. People who bought this also bought, works well on product pages, and so on and so forth. And we have a large number of different algorithms that we use in different situations for making recommendations. And in most cases, we have many more algorithms than we know what to do with. Some of them are relatively naive, like top sellers in category. Some of them are, we think, relatively clever. And we generally want to choose the best ones for the situation that we're in. But you may have 20 or 25 different algorithms that could run in this situation, and we only have two slots on the retailer's page to show. So what we do is we pick the best algorithm based on the context. We have a meta algorithm that analyzes the performance of the various algorithms, the various other algorithms in the various contexts, and based on the context, we choose the best algorithms, run those, and present them. And as I mentioned, we generally try to explain ourselves. We always want to know why we made the recommendations. People who bought Sony products also bought. People who bought Samsung products eventually buy. Things like that. You have to say why you're recommending something. And that matters because it restricts what we can do. Your previous presenter talked about some of the stuff that came out of the Netflix prize and the KDD. We generally do not do matrix factorization or latent semantic indexing or any of those things where you just end up with a large matrix and no idea why you ended up with a set of recommendations. Or you might know why, but you can't put a piece of text on it that explains it. So we try not to do that. Because it turns out that putting good explanations on your recommendation matters much more for performance than squeaking the last bit of algorithmic fanciness out of the latest academic papers. And we tried that, and it just turns out that the things that really matter are making recommendations that users trust and, frankly, picking a nice font. Another thing, as I mentioned, is that we're very retail focused, and retailers have strict requirements, strict business rules for what kind of recommendations you can make. The classic examples are, I might go and buy a DVD player for my kids, buy a Winnie the Pooh DVD player, and then I buy something else that the kids really are not supposed to see. And I'm sure I'm not the only person with small kids who does that. So it's quite likely that on the Winnie the Pooh DVD page, the actual best recommendations in some sense is, Batman or James Bond or something like that. But the retailer just does not want that. The retailer wants kids-focused recommendations on the kids' pages. And so they have business rules like that we just have to follow. Other things are less obvious business restrictions that, they might not want you to recommend Nike sneakers on a Reebok page because they don't want to take off Reebok. Other things that are a little bit more subtle are that retailers have products that they're sometimes trying to unload. On Monday, the new Canon digital camera is released, and now they have a pallet full of like last year's model that they really, really would like to sell. And so they might add merchandising rule that says, you really should sell some of that. And you really want to be careful with that because you don't want to come off as the pushy salesperson who, when you're shopping for shoes, comes running over and tries to sell you a digital camera, because it's going to be fairly obvious what they're trying to do. They don't have your best interest in mind, and they're just trying to, it's not really a win-win situation. So you want to balance the desire, the business desire of the merchant with our desire to, and it really is the merchant's desire, although they sometimes don't realize it, is to appear trustworthy. you know, you don't want to come off at that salesperson that come running and try to like just dump stuff on you. Instead, what you want to do is like you want to be the salesperson who says, okay, well, I noticed that you're shopping for digital cameras and we have the thing, this, you know, it's on sale. Admittedly, it's because then, you know, new model is about to come out, but this is a really good deal. I would recommend that you take a look at it. That's a recommendation that has the same effect, so to speak, but it comes across as trustworthy, and you're not obviously, you know, just trying to get rid of inventory. So as a matter of fact, one of our many taglines last year was respect the shopper. And that is, you know, as I mentioned earlier, building the user's trust and making recommendations that actually are useful or is in the long run a winning proposition. So a little bit more of the technical side of things. We're fast. We deliver a lot of recommendations. We're integrated client side into 50% of the largest retailers in the world. There's one very large Seattle-based retailer we're not on, but most of the other ones like Walmart, Target, Best Buy, JCPenney, really pretty much everybody uses our recommendation technology. And if you go to one of their pages, we are integrated on the client side, and we will, you know, we need to return the content that goes on their page, otherwise they're going to be unhappy. And we need to do that very quickly. We have, you know, sub 100 millisecond SLAs to the user's browser. And obviously, at that point, speed of light latency becomes an issue. So we have data centers spread across the United States and in Europe, where most of our clients' customers are. And we do that, you know, hundreds of millions of times every single day. Another thing that's interesting, that's near and dear to my heart, is that we learn fast. We aggregate all this information that we log from users' visits, and we build the models, and we start making recommendations on them, in many cases within hours. And we're trying to get that down to less than that. In many cases, it doesn't matter that much. I mean, people's, you know, shopping behavior for tennis shoes really doesn't change that dramatically. Catalogs made update, and you know, and we are able to respond to that pretty quickly. Pricing information, in particular, availability information, things like that, we're able to respond to that very quickly, a matter of minutes. Whereas things that are built based on, like, say, 120 days of user behavior clearly takes a little bit longer. But some merchants, for some merchants, it really matters a lot that we learn fast. 1-800-Flowers is one of them. Another one was a very promotion-driven company where their inventory changed every 8 hours, really, and things would be up, they would be available, and they'd go away. They'd be up, they'd be available, they'd go away. So we need to learn extremely quickly, and that was fun. Our technologies are, you know, all the usual suspects. We use a lot of, we write a lot of MapReduce jobs in Hadoop. Our analysts live in Hive and Pig. I'm personally a big Crunch fan. Those of you who don't know, Crunch is a MapReduce API that we use a lot. We're starting to use Kafka and Storm, which are streaming APIs or streaming parts of a streaming infrastructure for being able to react to user behavior even more quickly. And that's pretty much it. I fear that I do not have time for Q&A, but I'll be around, so if you have any questions, please come find me, and I assume it goes without hiring or without saying that we're hiring. So come find me if you're interested in that as well.